fm.kvmr.org. It uses a blog-like system that is known as Joomla, and we've rabbited on about that before. If you want to know what content management systems are, take a look at our website, and zen.kvmr.org, and you can click on the word shows, and you should see today's show up there, which is listed as January the 28th, which helps you figure out where we are near the end of the month. Next month is a leap year, so February's got 29 days in it. What the effect that will have on most machinery around here, I don't know. Usually leap years are pretty systematic and planned out by the astronomical people for long periods ahead. That wasn't so back in back in November last year, where the clocks fell back on a different date than they usually did. So the next blow-up date is possibly February the 29th, if some software there hasn't done the basic maths that tells you what year is a leap year or not. It puzzles people where leap years come from. It's simply because the Earth doesn't rotate a complete number of times in its passage around the sun. It's off by a quarter of a day. It adds up to a whole day off. If you didn't have leap years, you'd end up with a procession of the signs of your birth, and the seasons would slide by 6 hours a day, basically, continuously over the years, until at one point in the Middle Ages, before they'd quite figured this out, the discrepancy was 11 days. And that accumulated off amount was suddenly stuck on one day, and there was complaints to the church that people had 11 days stolen out of their lives by a jump forward on the calendar. We're going to attempt to take calls here. That should be fun. Bear with us if there's any little problems, and you're welcome to call us about any technical issues, and from about 1:30 on, more specifically about the wonderful thing known as Linux. Good afternoon, caller. Live on Zentech. Go ahead.
Is that me?
This is you. It works. I'm so glad. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, by the way, Glenn's machine answers the call by saying, "This is the flea market."
Well, you can sell stuff if you like. Hey.
I just wanted to let you know.
I can't fix that from here, Paul.
Okay, so my question is, hey, you know, with the development of all these, kind of multimedia computers and setting up surround sound, without using Wi-Fi, I've tried just using with cables, and I noticed that there seems to be a loss of the strength of the signal, I guess you would call it, coming through the line. So in other words, I have a power speaker at the end of a 25-foot line,
yeah,
and it doesn't get very loud.
Did you say a powered speaker?
Yeah. Well, it's actually a boom box that powers the speaker.
So in other words, the speaker array that you've got has got its own power supply. Would that be true?
Yes.
Typically, if you haven't got a powered speaker array and you're sending signals over to across a pair of wires driven by your amplifier, there is a fairly high current at a fairly low voltage, and you'll take a loss in the signal with the length of the run of the cable. But if this unit is supposed to be itself powered, that shouldn't really be happening. Is this a line output from, what is it, Hi-Fi or a computer, or what is it?
This is from HP Pavilion, one that's got a lot of power, a lot of RAM.
Right, so what you're really after is what's happening with the sound as it emerges from your HP and ends up going across to this powered array of, what is it, 5x1 speakers or a boombox and little speakers and stuff, right?
Yeah, I haven't got it all set up. That's the first one, so we could have, the internet radio stuff is so great.
Yeah, and we're out on the web, too.
Yeah,
you know what I would suggest?
Although I'm in my car, so I'm not listening. But
right.
The main thing I wanted to say was, or ask, was, do I need to put an amplifier between the computer and the...
Shouldn't need to. The power... Okay. Jeff's shaking his head, and Glenn's got... Glenn's actually on the air. Glenn, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. That means you must have accessed things from the website, which is good.
Yes, I have.
Excellent.
And you know what I would suggest is test this with a short, 2 or 3 foot speaker wire and see if you still get the same low volume. It's possible you may not have the volume turned up someplace in the sound scheme on the computer. I had that trouble with my laptop, and it was a really weird thing. And when I fixed that, and basically you can get there by double clicking on the little speaker down on the taskbar on the lower right hand side if you're using Windows. So check all of those and make sure that they're all up. And then I would say test it with a short run of speaker wire and make sure that the distance is what you think is the problem. Because, as Paul said, that shouldn't be the problem.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, it's very ironic that that there are so many different places within the structure of the software for altering the volume, like the master volume, the volume switch down at the near the clock, and then there's volume switches in each of the programs.
Some of them are going together. Some of them are not.
Yeah.
No,
And ideally, what I would suggest is, you know, set everything sort of static, even on the computer. And if, if this is an external powered speaker system, use the volume on that to control your volume up and down.
Excellent.
That would do it.
Thank you very much. And last question, do you have to use powered speakers?
Did you say, do you have to use powered speakers?
Yes.
It's better if you do. It depends on the make of the computer. Most computers send out a puny signal of about 100 millivolts, which is a sort of 1/10 of a volt. At a fairly low current, so it's supposed to be able to go, I forget what the distance is.
If you get one of these fancy new, like, 5.1 or 7.1 speaker systems, usually the subwoofer is powered, and then the speakers come out of that or out of its own little amplifier.
Right, I forget
you may want to try that.
Yeah, the run distance of a line signal, I wouldn't run it any more than about 15, 20 feet.
Uh-huh.
It will decrease slightly, but not as bad if it's as if it were directly powered.
Even if it wasn't powered, then? I've got some really beautiful surround sound speakers, but I realized, these aren't powered. I haven't tried them yet.
Yeah, computers aren't made to power that type of speaker in general. Remember, even 5 or 10 years ago, you got these little speakers that had the huge transformer, and you'd have to plug that in and just power these two tiny little speakers sitting next to your computer.
Is there a kind of a standard amplifier that one could plug in the computer outputs into that could then go to the speakers, the five speakers?
Ideally, what you'd have is a digital system where you don't have that 100 millivolt signal. You've got SPDIF or even better, TOS link, which is a digital feed, and the box that you get is then called a 5.1 amplifier. So it takes that single input, which is done digitally, and splits it into two front, two back, one sender small, and a boombox thingy. And that's done digitally, and it will run and run and run for a long distance, and then it will quit. It won't fade. It either works or it doesn't work. So if you've got a digital output, try using that.
Either way, I'd recommend an amplifier, just any home amplifier. Use new, whatever you can get your hands on.
Hey, thank you so much, guys.
All right, thank you, Glenn. Are you controlling our vertical and horizontal here?
I certainly am, if you'd like me to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's go on to our next caller then. You're live here on Zentech rather than the flea market this afternoon. Hi.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I have a very general question. It doesn't really relate to your show, but I'm your very old Mac computer guy that lives up in Tahoe. And I listen to the station on the Truckee translator.
Yeah.
And it seems to your signal seems to be going on and off for about a week now. I was just wondering if anybody down there knows that. Hello?
Yes, I'm not sure if Paul Patterson, our station, is aware of that. Now, you said it's going off on and off constantly?
Oh, every so often. And it'll go off for 5 minutes or so, 10 minutes. I don't know. I change the channel. I get sick of waiting.
Okay. Well, it's possible that we may be having power issues.
Yeah.
So I would suggest, I would think that during this time of year, that's probably the main reason. Maybe, Paul, can you address that? Okay. I wonder what happened with Paul.
Yeah. Here's what happened with Paul. You know, we're no longer the flea market. We're now Zentech. As you were talking, as you guys were sorting out the world's problems, we're back on there. So when people call up now, we'll announce Zentech, not the flea market. So you can't sell things. You can only fix things.
Oh, great. So did you hear the situation? He's up in Truckee, Paul, and the signal.
Well, I'm not in Truckee, but, yeah, I listened to that translator.
Listening to the Truckee translator. And every once in a while, the signal just goes away. In 5, 10, 15 minutes, it'll come back. I'm suggesting that maybe it's just power situation this time of year.
Are we talking 105.1?
Yes.
Yes.
There are reported problems with the fact that there is a lot of competition for the airspace there, so it may depend on who's nearby. And as is typical these days, there's neighboring transmitters near 105.1. If you can actually tune your radio so it reports 105.1, not 105.2, if you can hit it smack bang right on that frequency.
Right.
Is that what you've done?
No, yes, I have. And actually, it's been going on for about a week now, and it's not the usual interference that I get because, the reception up here is very bad.
Right.
Anyway, which kind of fades in and out, but this is like the signal is completely going off.
Yeah, what's happening is all radio communications, whether it's Wi-Fi or our own FM signal, are dealing with two things. One is how sensitive your receiver is, in other words, how low a signal it can get, and
right.
how well it can discriminate it against other stuff.
Well.
So to boost the sensitivity, I would try to get some kind of external antenna or additional antenna on your radio.
Yeah, no, I've done all that.
And also try to block other signals, so
right.
you can muck around with tinfoil and wear a tinfoil hat and do all that kind of stuff.
Oh boy!
In this case, in the signal that's going off totally.
It seemed to change about a week ago, and I've actually changed stereos since then. I hooked up my better one, and the same thing with this one. It's like it's completely going out.
Right.
It's just different. I just wanted to see if somebody knew or anything, just in case.
Yeah, you need to improve the discrimination from the other stations by getting some kind of directional antenna, so it wouldn't be just the two wires. What a racket. Is that you, Glenn?
Yeah, sorry. I'm trying to unplug that.
I think it's Glenn's bionic pacemaker's thrown a wheelie about Truckee or something. Holy cow.
There we go. Sorry.
Oh, much better. It makes us sound business-like when we've got technology going off. Yes, the answer, caller, is to try to make this discriminate better against other signals by having a reflective receiver. Hey, Glenn, are you dying?
Can you still hear? Sorry.
Yeah.
Much better.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I do have an antenna hooked up, so it seems like something changed. But anyway, I just wanted to let you guys know in case there is some kind of a technical problem up here.
All right, thank you. It's
okay.
Other people is the problem, as ever.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, then.
Bye-bye.
Fire them, Glenn. What a great noise. Wow.
I'm just wondering if it isn't the snow and the bad weather and everything.
None of that helps. Let's remind people that they are listening to the Zen Tech Radio Show here through 2 p.m., at which point, good stuff. No, it's not good stuff. Wrong show. Jimmy and Carter's Rock and Roll Party will be here at 2 through 4 p.m. In the meantime, Zentech will handle your calls at 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. It's 1:22 in the afternoon, 40 degrees. Our website is zen.kvmr.org. And Jeffrey Hine will be here talking about Linux at about 1:30. So questions about Linux, it being a so-called operating system, why don't you say a little bit about it while the lines are a little bit quiet here?
Okay. Well, Linux is an alternative to Windows.
And the other one?
FreeBSD,
right.
Which is what Mac OS is based off of. And it is free. I call it open source, which means a little more than free. You can also change it however you like, which is advantageous for people that have specific needs that aren't addressed through existing software.
Now, here's a confusion, Jeffrey, and that is that it is actually okay to sell it, right?
It may be
unethical, but you can sell it. You can do anything you like with it, right?
You can sell it. If you redistribute it, and you made any changes to it, you have to resubmit all your changes back to the open source community.
So you can't close it is what it means.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like to my mind, it's very much like a book that's still being written.
Yep,
the
time.
Now, Windows and Mac are also like books that are being written, but they're being written by guys on an island you can't talk to.
Yes.
So when you say you have to submit all the changes that you made, and where do you submit those back to?
Actually, there are many different ways. Personally, I've just made it available through my webpage.
Right.
You just have to make it available to the public, however you can do that.
Okay.
Most people's question is, now in your case, there's a local business service that you provide, which is jphein.com. So for Jeffrey's website, please go to jphein.com. The question for most people is, how can you make money out of something that's free? And your answer to that is?
Well, basically support.
Right.
I will support the software. The software itself is free, but it takes someone to install it, to support it, to make sure it runs.
So it's like handing out a car doesn't mean you know how to drive.
Right.
How long have you been doing this, Jeffrey?
Well, I've been working with Linux for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. I've been developing in Linux for the last 2 years, but I've been using computers since I was 10.
Right. The other thing that confuses people is that when you get Mac OS X, for example, it comes in several different versions, but it doesn't come in different flavors. So the current version is 10.5, also known as one of the cats. Leopard, is it? I forget.
Yeah.
And the current incarnation of Windows is known as XP, and it supersedes all previous versions. Linux comes in different flavors.
Since anyone could edit it or use it, change it, there are many, many different companies and people that have customized it to specific niches and applications.
Right. So it's the same thing done different.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've recommended, I don't know, are you familiar with Ubuntu?
It's what I recommend.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
The reason we recommend that is because it's very much community-oriented and it's engaged in the third world. It's also, to my mind, probably the easiest one to try out. Jeff and I spoke about this beforehand. We often try to recycle computers on this show and find places to send the old stuff you feel sorry for that was a good workhorse that won't do the current thing.
Yep.
So the answer in your case to this old stuff is what?
Linux for sure. You can buy a sub-$100 laptop and put Linux on it and run the newest Firefox, do all your internet browsing, word processing.
So this is all the stuff that couldn't possibly run XP where there's not sufficient horsepower.
Not at all. In fact, I brought with me today a 10-year-old Sony Vaio running Linux, and that's what I use.
Now, what would you say is the minimum requirement in memory and hard drive space?
Hard drive space, in my laptop right now, I don't even have a hard drive. I have a flash drive, which has 512 megabytes.
Is it actually firing from the flash drive?
It is.
So it fits in basically half a gigabyte of storage.
Right, which I'm using something called Puppy Linux, which loads into RAM memory as opposed to actually running off a hard drive.
What's the easiest way, would you say, Jeff, for somebody to try this out? So we're talking about this stuff, and most people want to get a touch and a feel of this thing and try it out.
Well, you can order. They'll send you a CD for free from Ubuntu.com. Mm-hmm. You can go to their webpage and download a CD image and burn it yourself. Mm-hmm. And basically, you just pop that in, restart your computer, and you can try it out and see how you like it.
Now, it's a risky statement, but it's actually okay to do this on your main workhorse computer with all your taxes and accounting on it, right?
It is.
It is relatively, because it doesn't touch the hard drive.
It doesn't touch it, no.
But ideally, we'd use old hardware and do this.
Yeah. You could see how it works on old hardware.
What we're going to do is, if you go to the website zen.kvmr.org, there's a link on there which says shows as usual, and it's got the dated shows, and there's a special link called Linux where we will put notes, or Jeffrey will log in and put notes about today's show.
Yeah.
The good starting point, I know what you think, a good starting point is to go to Wikipedia.
Yes.
And put in Linux. That was one of the best sites to describe this thing, I think.
And also look up open source software, because that's kind of the founding.
It's very much akin to what goes on here at the radio station, which is some 180 volunteer broadcasters come in here and make the thing called KVMR Community Radio possible, which is a combined effort. So there's a sort of organic entity called KVMR that does radio.
Definitely.
And there's this organic entity called Linux, and it's embodied particularly in the Ubuntu distribution. So we'll put the link on the website, ubuntu.com, not
actually,
.org, right?
Both. I think.
I mean,
.com is what I use. I'm pretty sure it works.
What we'll do is we'll open the phones to questions, if you have them, of Jeffrey, or general questions, but let's make the use of the guy while he's here. And I should point out that Jeffrey and myself are both very much involved in Linux, but it ain't a mainstream thing. It may be one day. It's got a very special niche, and we are about doing special things once in a while. So we'll be fielding calls here at 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. And Glenn's on the line also. And Glenn's using Linux.
I'm using Linux with my new little Asus 7-inch laptop.
Yeah.
Although it's not the Ubuntu, it's the Zandros version. And I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Now, you were a neophyte to this. In other words, somebody that had really not done this before. How did you find it overall?
Excellent. The easy mode was a bit challenging, and so I went into the regular mode. And I think, Paul, either you directed me or somebody directed me to the EEPC is what this is called, EEPC users forum. They give tips there on how to get into the easy mode, and it really changed things quite a bit. I'm still challenged selling software in doing the most recent update, it caused my Firefox to not work, and I can't figure out how to make the newest version of Firefox for Linux available and it run. So I'm going to start over. I'm going to reformat the whole thing and put it back to its factory default and start again and see what I can do from there. But that's one of the nice things, too, is you can just redo it if you need to. Mm-hmm. And this is such a small unit. It has no hard drive. So yeah. It's something that I'm not going to be storing things on.
Right. Yeah, well, one thing I'd recommend is just go to the Firefox website, download their binary and see if that works.
Sometimes what they'll do in the case of Zandros is there's what they call a distribution that's made to integrate with a package installer. I mean, it's as Glenn pointed out, the simple mode was hard and the hard mode was simpler. And it's what you might call second system syndrome, which is you're going, well, the easy way didn't do it. Let's get really complex and perhaps that'll make it easier. So in your case, it did, Glenn. Was that true?
Well, it did, and the advanced mode makes it look more like, quote, Windows. So that's what made it easier for me.
Right.
One of the problems is the Synaptics package manager doesn't recognize anything other than a .deb installation file.
Right.
And unfortunately, I haven't been able to find a .deb Firefox that it can see. I've been playing around with a whole lot. Having difficulty, but again, it's something that I can play with and hopefully learn more from it.
You know what's interesting? That is, Glenn's already quite getting into this realm of. I mean, it's esoteric. As I said to Jeffrey before the show, people are going DEB files. It sounds like Deborah. It is actually. It stands for one of the developer's wives' names, which was Deborah. There's always this new trivia out there.
Sure.
And now what's happening is if you've got Windows, you can't frankly tell how that damn thing's packaged, and almost anything could happen. Is it worse that you can see what's happening? It's almost like looking at your stomach digesting a dinner. It's kind of gross. You'd rather just eat your dinner. Well, in the case of Linux, you get to eat your dinner and see the digestive process that's going on. So if it looks bad, well, that's only what's going on under the hood in those other operating systems, you know?
Right. At least with Linux, you have some control over that.
Yeah.
So how about we take our next phone call?
Go for it. You're the man in control.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the air with Zentech. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Cool. Oh, that was fast. Hello.
Go right ahead. You're live on the air on Zentech.
Oh, okay. Thank you, love. Hi. I'm calling about that ticket to England that guy was selling. No, I'm kidding. Can I buy it, please?
You fancy a visit to good old England. It's not cold, wet, and rainy enough here, so I'm going to England.
Oh, God, yes. Hey, I've got... I'm totally like a, what do you call it, illiterate computer person, but I figured out how to get an email on this thing and stuff like that. I've been using it. It's a laptop, a Dell. And it's got a problem, and something might have knocked it out of whack. It'll fire up, but then it sounds like John Travolta's going to go disco dancing across the keys. It kind of goes bing, bing, bing like that right off the bat, and then it doesn't go on. The picture, whatever, it says Dell, bing, bing, bing. And then it goes off.
That's as far as it goes with the Dell logo?
See, yeah, right.
You said C. Can you make it ding on the telephone so we can hear it ding?
Oh, I don't know if you're going to hear it.
Go for it. There's different types of ding. There's flavors of ding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. One of them is a warning set of noises that tell you that something's physically wrong with the machine.
It's only like very... At first it kind of clicks, and then it kind of goes... You know like those little guns that you go, the ray guns, like that? It sounds like those.
We got to hear this. Can you do it?
Yeah, but I don't know if you're going to hear it. Hold
well, you
on.
Know, it's quality, not quantity. Never mind if it's quiet.
Oh, I heard that. Just a minute. Let's see. Okay, ready? Let's see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I turned it off first. All right, now, here we go. Here you are, then. Wait.
Boy,
did you hear that?
No.
Well, it's like you have to put your ear way down. It just gets going.
Now, right after that, is there any other racket?
No.
It just seizes and stops, and that's the end of it. Is anything lit up? Is there like the hard drive light lit up or anything like that?
The screen lights up, you know. The screen is that kind of a dingy kind of a blue-gray, and then it goes Dell, bing, bing, bing for a minute, and then Dell shuts off. The screen stays the same, and then the little lights are on the right, those little UFOs, the little green lights
on the
right. Sure.
Do you get any mouse pointer?
Pardon?
Any mouse pointer on the screen?
Can
you actually move the mouse pointer on the screen at all?
No. It doesn't. The little arrow doesn't show up. Now, last week, I was trying to... excuse me. Some friends of mine were playing, and I was trying to go into, I think it was the MySpace or something. I was trying to go in there and press on the band name so I could kind of see a little preview of it before I, like, went all the way down there. You know what I mean? And just to, you know, it clicks up a little thing of the band. You get a little snippet of whatever they have on there with 3,000 million other people with their things on there. So anyhow, I found it, and I went to press on the band name, and it came up something about, in order to access this, you've got to have certain hardware in there or something.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, which you could do now.
Sounds like virally challenged operations happening. What do you think, Glenn?
Yeah, I think you've probably gotten a virus either by opening some email or I don't know of any viruses. Can MySpace compromise your computer in that way, Paul?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, okay.
There's
okay.
been a number of incidents where there's what's the word, a plethora? Is that the collective noun for MySpace stuff?
Yes.
Jeff's nodding his head. There's a bunch of third-party stuff that's been jammed into MySpace.
Oh, yeah. I clicked on. I said, oh, okay, what the hell, you know, maybe
that's
will
what
access
is.
Me to every all the different music on there. So stupidly, I didn't check with anyone. And
well, you brought Hades into your computer.
I downloaded or whatever you call it, all the thing, and it had a whole agreement, and it was free, blah, blah, blah. But then it's in there. It says, oh, you may be, you may get ads periodically that will pop in that of a mature nature. Anyhow, I finally got through. I pressed on the band name. And up pops the porno thing.
Here's the answer. If you look on the web for a gentleman, a fine gentleman, I might add, by the name of Stanford Wallace. Spamford Wallace.
Oh, Stanford.
He's prosecuted recently for breaking into and creating 100,000 MySpace websites.
Oh, God.
And in so doing, he then put in links and malware and mischief onto the MySpace site that directed stuff back towards him and installed things on your computer. So you could say, I would say it's MySpace's fault for making that possible. But if you want to read the bad news about how these things happen and how they work, type in the name of the inimitable Spamford Wallace.
No, I take your word for it, love. I don't want to read that.
So what the solution
is...
The solution is going to be you're going to probably need to reinstall the operating system and just start fresh on that computer.
So do what the... you mean it'll still work?
Maybe. Well, potentially. If you have your installation disk for your operating system from Dell...
Uh-huh. Yes, I do.
And it's a time-consuming process. You'll have to redo a bunch of updates. Is this still under warranty with Dell?
I don't know. My sister's old boyfriend found it for sale about a year ago. It was like $400 off the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And
probably
I got it, and I think it might have been a used one. I'm not sure. It's always worked. Of course, I didn't use it that much because I don't know what the hell I'm doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm trying to research a bunch of stuff, and...
My guess is
the band didn't even pop up. It was just and a stupid porno thing at that.
Not even a fun one. Well, you've been visited by Spamford Wallace and his cronies and link farmers.
The whole thing is so lame anyway. Nobody goes out and plays gigs anymore. They just have to put it all on a stupid computer, you know? It's like what happened to music.
Hey, even Barry Manilow's out there, so does that endorse it?
Oh, God. Well, he was funny once. He said, oh, we have to take the Valium flight tonight. After I heard that, I thought it was pretty funny.
Anyway, I think we've handled that, and we should move along, but I hope that works for you.
Put the hardware back in.
Reload it somehow.
Oh, you guys rock. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, we've got an email address, zen@kvmr.org, which goes to both Glenn and I. And we will also forward things to Jeff if they come in about Linux. Jeff Hine is in the studio with us here through to answering, if you like, calls about Linux, even if you have had a... We'd like to hear from people like Glenn that have tried it and what their conclusions are about it. Please bear in mind, Linux is not a replacement that's supposed to take care of everything that Windows or Mac didn't do. If you look at it that way, it's like saying an elephant is a replacement for a jumbo jet just because they both refer to elephants somehow. They're each good for their own purposes, so please bear that in mind. Hey, do you want to punch this call, Glenn?
Sure. And basically, if you want to just go to the computer that works on the Internet and do some word processing, any of the Linux systems will work really well. I think we have caller. Are you there? No, we don't have you yet. I'm going to push that, and now you're there live on the air. Hi.
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 I have a question. I mistakenly installed Billio on my computer. Billio?
Could you spell that?
B-I-L-L-E-O, I think it's called. I'm not home, so I'm calling you from the cell. I don't know what I was doing. It was one of those free things that your last caller talked about.
Oh, right, yeah.
Now I don't know how to get it out of there.
So it's popping up nags and porno and ads and stuff. Uh-huh. Let's ask Jeff about that. What do you, when you're forced on a certain day to get Windows stuff, what do you use to clean up this stuff?
I try to use open software as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And there's actually something called WinPooch.
Okay.
Which will sit on your computer and ask you about, do you really want to do this? for a number of installations. And
That turned up immediately in Google, WinPooch, WinPooch. Yep. Look at that. There you
that's
go.
A preventative measure. It also comes coupled with an antivirus software called ClamAV.
Can it detect, can it clean off stuff that's got on there or just stop it?
ClamAV will do that.
Okay. The other one that Glenn and I have mentioned before is that you can go to adaware.de, I think it is, Glenn.
I believe that.
Beg pardon?
I just installed Adaware.
Okay, did it find anything or clean anything?
I don't know. I haven't had time to work with it yet.
That's a pretty good one. Don't forget to push the button that says update so you get the latest database of mischief, and then clean, or scan, rather.
Okay.
That would probably take care of it.
Okay. Could you spell Filio? Is it T-I or B-I?
B as in boy.
B as in boy.
It's supposed to be a Bill Payne sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Bilio.
Bilio, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, and if you want to do anything with Bill Payne, do it directly through your bank. Don't download anybody else's software to try to do something like that. You're giving all of your personal and private information out if you're using a third-party software.
Right, whereas, in fact, you should be giving that information to me.
How about when you're online with your bank? Can you use that to your debit card through your bank when you want to buy something online? Do you do that?
Typically, yeah.
Yeah, I use that. I use my credit card. I don't have any difficulties buying things online. The biggest decision you need to make is who are you buying from? Is it somebody you can trust or not?
Yeah, okay.
And one of the nice things about eBay is if you use PayPal, you can still use your credit card or your checking account or your PayPal account, and the person you're buying from doesn't see any of that personal information. PayPal, which is owned by eBay, keeps all of that private.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks for calling in.
And I should point out, as Glenn knows, that PayPal decided to shut my account down for 2 days for no good reason. And they made me fill in my phone number and called me up with an automated system and did all this stuff. They wouldn't explain what had happened. And I was supposed to feel reassured. But if I was somebody that ran a business using PayPal, which people do, there was no comeback about that. I would have been DOA for 2 days. DIW, dead in the water. For two or three days. So if you're doing online business that relies on this kind of system, make sure you've got at least more than one way of handling it. In my case, it was okay, and it came back. There was nobody to talk to, nothing to do, and they wouldn't explain what had happened.
Right, and that is one of the sad things about them is if and when things go wrong, you can't get a hold of them easily. So let's go on to our next caller.
Sure.
Who's been patiently holding. Caller, you're live on the air. Hi.
Good day. Hi, Glenn and Paul. This is James.
Hi, James.
Hi there. When using for backup, using the ThinkBack program with your external hard drive,
right,
and you have that page open, do I remember you saying to click on the word default up in the upper part of the toolbar, or is it down at the bottom toolbar towards the left? It says run.
There is a profile that's in there. I'll explain this a little bit more to listeners in a minute. There's a backup profile called default or backup. You double click on that and it then triggers and does the job. In the white pane.
Okay, in the white pane default. All
yes,
right,
indeed.
Double click on it.
Then. Certainly.
All right. And I appreciate that. Help, does that provide the same function as hitting the run button?
Yes, if you indicate the profile. What we should explain to listeners is that there's a very nice free program where you can get a more enhanced version by paying for it, and it's called SyncBack, 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 which means synchronized backup. And you create a profile indicating where you want to get stuff and where you want to send it to and what you want to exclude, and it will do it from all times henceforth, which is what James has got. And the default profile is called Default.
And it's from a company called Too Bright.
Two bright sparks. Yeah, do a Google search for SyncBack free, I think it is.
Okay.
Free version does everything we need.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, thanks, James.
Bye-bye. And we'll go ahead and take this next caller. You're live on the air. Hi.
I have a question. I heard you mention the word problems, and that trigger a red flag. We're involved in some activist stuff with the election that's coming up, and sending out emails to our supporters. And we send them out, one of our volunteers does, with a blind carbon copy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, her website is powered by iPowerWeb, and they went through some changes.
Mm-hmm.
And all the BCC emails show up. She can only send them out in batches of 50 or whatever their limit is.
Right.
But I'm on the list, of course, and I...
So you saw everyone else's in spite of the fact you'd plugged in BCC.
Yes, and I tried to do... I was telling her that it was happening, and she... Because she's not getting her own coming back, so I... Well, she is. She must be, but she's not checking her
right.
own emails for that. And so I did a reply to all, thinking, well,
ah.
I'll show... No, no, because I wanted to show... When I would try to copy them, I couldn't get them, but I did a reply to all, or, you know, didn't hit the send button, and they're gone. They're not there. So the only way I could show her
mm-hmm.
was to drag, you know, copy, and then paste them into a
right.
different email, because she couldn't see it happening. Any thoughts as to what, it's got to be iPowerWeb, would you not say? Or
that depends. How are you sending your messages out off your machine at home?
She is doing that.
Oh, excuse me. How is she sending them? Through the internet provider or through the website?
That's a good question. I don't know. I presume she's just going through the website.
What?
So she's not using like Outlook or Outlook Express or Thunderbird. She's going to the web page directly for iPowerWeb.
I imagine she's going to her website,
mm-hmm.
and iPowerWeb gives an email.
And it's like web-based email, would that be
yes,
true?
Yes.
Here's what you have to watch out for first, and that is always consider, like Dr. Gregory House does, not that humans lie, but that human error is possibly more likely. She may actually be thinking they're blind carbon copies, and they're not. That's
well,
possible.
I tend to believe they are, because when I did hit reply to all, they don't show up on my computer.
Right, BCC should never show up in the destination.
Correct.
Right, now what to do perhaps is sidestep the whole issue by getting a system such as PHP List, which you can get iPowerWeb to install or install it yourself, and it's specifically meant for generating propagation lists where you don't mean people to talk to each other, but you mean to propagate messages to them.
Oh, okay.
So I would look up. It's a little bit tricky to set up. Once you've done it, it's worth it, though, and that is called PHP List.
Okay.
And as long as iPowerWeb is on your side and willing to work with you, there shouldn't be an upper limit. Don't forget, if you're sending out political stuff, people get, I don't know which persuasion this is, but I can sort of guess, it only takes one person receiving these email messages to intentionally send in a complaint to get it shut down.
Okay, it's an environmental, political
That's
thing.
That's enough to upset some people. What
yes,
doesn't these days? So if somebody decides they're going to really do a number on you, they can then complain to iPowerWeb saying, this is a spam, when it's not.
Oh, I see.
There's
I
no
see.
Way out of that. But do check out phplist.com.
Okay.
As a way of sidestepping your questions. I'm not answering your question. I'm posing a different solution.
Right, right. No problem. Because we can't figure out how it's happening. Now we don't want to send out anymore, and with the election a week away, we have to.
So it may be a little late in the day to go and fire up PHP List or something like that. Talk to iPower and give them an example. Whenever you do this, it's always good to have a specific example you can show and refer to.
Okay. Well,
alrighty.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome.
Okay.
Bye. Thanks, Marilyn.
Bye-bye. Yes.
Bye-bye.
Yes, bye-bye.
And we'll go there. And then let's take this next call. It is 1:48 in the afternoon. This is KBMR-FM Nevada City. Caller, you're live. Hi.
Hi. I heard a discussion of transactions online a little earlier, and I thought I'd mention the fact that I heard that if you have a debit card and somebody gets your information, they can siphon your entire debit account out.
Good
so
point.
Quickly. Whereas if you make a transaction online with a credit card, your liability is generally limited to $50, I think.
That is a good point, and typically it depends on which bank you're with. Sometimes you do have recourse through your debit card. I had a situation several years ago with Tri-County Bank, and a company that I had told to stop providing service to me continued to bill me, and surprisingly, Tri-County Bank refunded or put the money back in my account and notified the folks that, you know, to stop doing what they were doing.
Nice.
But you do have much greater protection and guarantees from a credit card as opposed to a debit card.
Right on. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks for letting us know. Okay.
Okay, and I have a quick announcement to make. I won't be here in 2 weeks. I'm going off to England on Wednesday.
You won't physically be here, but hopefully you're going to be nice to me and call in, aren't you?
That will work, yeah. And in Britain now, you can buy for £20, which is the equivalent of $40, unlimited world calling anywhere, including the U.S., and several of my friends and family have that. So every time I go there, things get more and more interesting. Now it's basically unlimited calling anywhere people know somebody for a flat rate.
Now, you said $40 U.S., is that a monthly fee?
Yeah,
or?
That's it. It's a flat rate. Most people would much rather pay a flat rate than these sort of incrementally changing, mystifying bills.
Right. And one of the things, too, with phones in many other parts of the world is even a phone call to your next-door neighbor costs you.
Right.
They don't have what are called local calling zones like we have here.
Right.
For example, in Nevada City, you can call Grass Valley, and that's a local call, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Right. So to Britain, the whole world has become a global village where you can call clear across the world. And the calls are perfectly clear. They're not using voice over IP. They're using the bulk purchase of enormous quantities of bandwidth where it's a regular phone call at a flat rate.
Oh, great.
So that's what I'll be doing from the UK in 2 weeks' time from now, which will be the 11th of February, which is a few days before Valentine's Day. So we ought to be able to have a Valentine's special. Is romance on the internet even possible, Glenn?
You know, it could be. You know, people have called into the flea market and they've asked, you know, hey, can we have, you know, what do you call it, the dating game kind of thing.
Oh, a white slave, you mean, that kind of stuff?
I don't know if I'd call it that. But, you know, because we've had young horses looking for love. We've had dogs looking for love on the flea market. And somebody said, well, let's have people looking for love. And, you know, it's probably a good idea, but I don't think it would work well.
Right, but we ought to be able to address that next time. And I'm hoping we'll have Jeffrey Hine back again. We'll actually forward announce the show where we'll be addressing more Linux questions. I'm hoping that some of the things we said about Linux sort of ring a bell with people. And we're hoping to get more people next time that actually have experiences of having tried it out. In our studio here today at KPMR FM Nevada City is our guest, physically present, not virtually, in the studio, Jeffrey Hine. And his website, if you want to learn more, is
jphine.com.
And on that,
jphein.com.
And he specializes in business applications for Linux stuff. What's your record uptime, Jeffrey, for a server? In other words, a piece of equipment just running without interruption?
Well, for the last 2 years, it's been in development phases, and I've had various test machines up and down. I had one for 3 months up, and then I made changes and had to reboot. But the possibility is very long time.
Right, I've had 9 month uptimes, and what typically happens then, the probability of there being a power failure or somebody tripping over a cable or myself doing something stupid is extremely high. The first
right.
is actually the most common one, me doing something stupid.
Right.
But it's extremely reliable. Essentially, if you run a Windows machine, and even to some extent a Mac operating system, many applications gain too much control over the operating system and steal memory away from it, and end up resulting in the operating system suffering from something like Alzheimer's disease, where there aren't enough resources left over, freed up from the application that finished, to do the next job. And it gets worse and worse and worse with time.
It does. And actually, in Linux, it's better to leave your computer running longer because of responsiveness, because Linux actually remembers programs you've opened and keeps them in memory, so next time you want to run them.
Sounds anthropomorphic that it remembers and so on, but really, when I first ran Linux, I was amazed that it consumed all the memory it could find.
Right.
But it actually makes sense.
Right.
So it's trying to get everything off the hard drive into memory that it can possibly do.
Right.
Windows, it's a more or less deterministic environment, so it tries to free up memory because it's got no idea what's going to happen next.
Yep.
Hey, should we field another call?
How about if we do that? Let me get back to that window, and we'll say good. Oh, we're going to go here. Good afternoon, caller. You're live on the air with Zintech. Welcome.
I've used Linux several times and I just wondered, one of the things I kind of was a little frustrated with, it seemed like the performance was slow. Like when you go to launch an application, OpenOffice or the web browser and stuff, it seems sluggish. I've used it like MySQL and Samba and some other for like server-based applications and had no problems with those, but
okay.
Desktop application seems slow.
Well, one of the main problems I've run into for that myself is your graphics card may not have the right drivers or the most updated drivers. What distribution do you use?
I use the last version of Ubuntu.
Oh, the latest one?
Yeah, well, okay. It's been about 6 months since I played with it very much. I got a zillion computers, and I've got several with different operating systems on.
Okay.
And the machine that I installed, and I don't know, it's probably a, I'm trying to remember what it was, Pentium-based machine, but okay. It had Windows 2000 on it, which performed fairly well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, my recommendation would be to update Ubuntu to the latest one if it's not. And then under system, there's a menu item called proprietary drivers.
Okay.
And you can click on that, and it'll tell you if you need a proprietary driver or if you're using one. Or
Caller, are you running this from the hard drive or from a CD?
No, from a hard drive.
Okay, so that's not the issue. Anyone that runs it from a CD will have that convenience, but that would slow it down.
It does, yes.
In my office, I got a ton of computers. I got three computers, and one with Windows 2000, one with Linux, and one with Windows 98. And then I got a couple laptops. So I got quite a menagerie of stuff. But I don't know. I just did. I'm kind of an experimenter. I've used it a lot when I was in one of my jobs. We installed MySQL, and I set up Samba with a web server, and stuff like that.
Right.
With it.
Well, MySQL is, I believe, does it qualify as open source? It just got bought by Sun Microsystems for $1 billion.
It's a great, if you have to do real database, not these little baby ones.
Some serious horsepower, right. So there's nothing that's uncommercial about open source. It holds up against the best and the rest.
It does.
Yeah, I've used it. I've used Oracle and those environments and stuff like that, and I think MySQL is a great environment and stuff, especially if you want to build a website with a database behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use it myself.
Yeah, what to look for on the web about that is LAMP, which is Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. And if that is too many acronyms for one show, the thing to do is to go into Google and type LAMP. And we can talk about it next time. We do mean to have a specific show, if not in 2 weeks, which is before Valentine's Day when I'm not here, perhaps in 30 days or 4 weeks. And we have to wrap up the show. I'd love to talk some more about this. We will do that next time.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks very much. And that
thanks for coming into the show today. We really appreciate that, too.
Of course. I appreciate being allowed to be here.
And promote the Linux thingy. It's a community operating system like this station is, community radio station, with the best of the community that they can provide. And for the last hour of programming, which was the Zentech Radio Technology Show, we'd like to thank this underwriter who made it possible in at least a part, and that is Ohmsoft Technologies, which is a regionally family-owned internet service provider started by UCD students in 1997, providing internet services to suit individual needs, giving priority to customer privacy. More information is at website ohmsoft.com. Ohmsoft, the enlightened internet solution. And that leaves us at 2 minutes to the 2 o'clock witching hour when we head out. And James Accardi marches in here with his Brooklyn accent and does the rock and roll party. Now, we're on the web at zen.kvmr.org. I'm hoping Jeffrey will put notes about Linux up there for the next show.
I will.
And the email for Glenn and for myself, Paul Castor, who's been here for the last hour, is zen@kvmr.org. And once again, finally, Jeffrey's website, jphein.com. Any closing words, Glenn?
Just to let you know that Lori did write in with a question about Linux and Mac and Word. So I'm going to forward that over you'll be able to see it, Paul, because we went to Zen.
Okay.
And then I'll forward it over to Jeffrey, and maybe he can address that also. But I think one thing he's asking here, can I install Linux on Mac in order to be able to run Internet Explorer? And I don't think there's an Internet Explorer that can run in Linux.
No, there ain't. You are SOL. I'm afraid Windows and Internet Explorer have to go together these days, unfortunately.
Okay.
Ha ha.
Again, everybody, thanks for the show. Paul, thanks for being there. And you are listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City.
And we are ta-ta for now. Thank you again, Jeff. See you again in a couple of weeks for Valentine's Day.